If you would this afternoon go through the various practices of loving kindness, Maitriya and compassion, but particularly focusing on Karuna, Smetta Karuna, or Maitriya Karuna, Mudita, and Upeksha and Bali. Because that's putting it very simply, being with the Dharma is a very fluid situation. There is no way in which you can actually particularly give this formula and that's it. It's more like, you know, the finger pointing to the moon is very distant, by the way, it just tells you that way. And the best finger pointing to the moon for this non-discriminative awareness or non-thinking awareness is the actual practice of loving kindness or compassion towards all beings. Practice. So if you could go through some of the traditional ways in which that's approached, there's by category, just to check out that, for example, spiders, etc., are not on your anti-agenda. You know, like to see that every category of beings you're equally well disposed towards. And then there's the classic one of the types of beings. Starting with the spiritual teacher and then your parents, etc., 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 and eventually towards those that you call your enemies, whether you can maintain an equilibrium. In this sutra, it gives womb beings, beings who are born from seeds, etc., 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 and all the types like that, birthing ones. And that's particularly important because birthing, of course, is where it all starts. and the type of birth that you had, it will reveal all that. Strangely enough, you've got to get down to loving kindness to your birth, your own birth, the womb. There are many thoughts that you could expound on, and I think the more that you see, it's got to come to practice. Yes, it's good to hear the Dharma, it's beautiful in the beginning, it may motivate you, but it's even more beautiful to practice, because in the practice of it there's an immediate good feeling, by the way, and of course in the ultimate results of a realization of wisdom, so that's beautiful at the end, as they say. It's beautiful in the beginning, the middle, and the end. So all of it has to be in accord, and that's an important thing. You have to have the hearing and the practice and the results are all in accord. And you must have a picture of the results being in accord, etc., etc., etc. Back and forth, you weave those three things. Almost the past, the present, and the future, too. It's working that way. So it has to come to that, it has to come to practice. Otherwise, it will be a mere pseudo-mind stuff going on, chinti jnana, and I make a very bad pun, as I always do, chintsi knowledge, chintan jnana. And what good is it to you or to the world for all just your intellectualizations? But nevertheless, you might say the entire Dharma Sutra is just hints. So little glimpses of the mystical life. So we'll turn to the text. Great ones, the Mahasattva, perfect beyond learning, I mean mere learning. You're getting the mere learning. I hope you're getting the glimpse. But utter no words of teaching. Now that sounds really ridiculous. You know, here's the Lama. Lama speaking, but the Lama actually isn't set teaching. I mean, Dharma is an ongoing continuum of clear awareness, clear non-clinging blissful awareness, clear non-clinging blissful awareness. So in that sense, I've uttered words of teaching. but it's not a formula, it's a practice, it's a happening. Subhuti, what do you think? Has the Tathagata, is there a being, said being, attained the consummation of incomparable enlightenment? And has the Tathagata a teaching to enunciate? And he answers, Subhuti answers, as I understand Buddha's meaning, the Buddha once raised just a flower, right? And one of the great arahats just smiled. And he said, I've transmitted the transmission, which is no transmission, it's already there, etc. There is no formulation of truth, like a mere English words, because the teaching is actually beyond words. I have to repeat that over and over and over again. The teaching is beyond words. You can have all the words you want in it, or if may I put it that way, there's no in, but there is no formulation of truth. There is truth, which is called the consummation of incomparable enlightenment, but there's no formulation of truth called the consummation of incomparable enlightenment. Moreover, the Tathagata has no formulated teaching to enunciate. Start getting into formulas, you're setting it, putting it in concrete, as I say. Wherefore, because, and this you should really, if you could, put a big spike into your brain, which wouldn't be into the mind because the mind's flowing. This is the difference between brain and mind. Because, as the Tathagata said, the truth is uncontainable. Can't keep it in a little section. Can't reduce it to a formula. And is inexpressible. Therefore, you can utter all words about it. I can yak on. But remember, a yak is just a beast of burden. It neither is nor is not. It's beyond the statements of is and is not. Thus it is that this unformulated principle, unable to formulate principle, is the foundation of the different systems of all the sages. See, there's a big R in the sky called religion. It's not religion, and it flows down, and people get glimpses of it, and then they start in, this is Christianity, this is Buddhism, this is Islam, this is the Hebraic tradition, and so on. They all have glimpses of it, and they think they've got it. Each one of them thinks they've got it. No. But they can't all be, right? You see, they lack. They all lack. They all fall short of the glory of God. So it's equivalent, if I put it in other terms, God is actually inexpressible. But it talks. There's hints, and people get agitated, and they see little things, and they make prophecies, and they do this, and they dash around making formulas, and so on. But the actual is inexpressible. Now that you really ought to get a hold of right away. So therefore, don't even bother in some ways remembering what the Lama has said. If you really understand in depth, this is of this moment, it's a hint. Then of course you'll go on, oh yes, Dharma's inexpressible, therefore I'll shut up. Well, that's good that you shut up, but right? Nevertheless, you'll still get the Zen master. What have you to say? What have you to say? What have you to say? They want you to express. So they're also not caught in this, either is or is not. Having said it is inexpressible, what have you to say? That could be considered a technique. So if everyone in this room had something to say about it, you'd hear eventually all the voices are different. Mm-hmm. They're all different. Mm-hmm. And I'm only dealing with this next one because I really do believe that you should practice much. It's good for you. It's beautiful for you to practice. And by the way, the word that in this book is being translated as charity is the word compassion. Now there is a distinction kind of. In English, that charity is an act of charity, is an act of giving. You know, when she went to church, you know, and they had the missionary society, and she would always make an act of charity. She would always give to the missionary fund. Right? It's an act of charity. Or that someone who is hungry, right? She used to stand in the giving out soup, you know, from the church. You know, it's an act of charity. So most people think of charity as, which is not wrong necessarily, as giving something physical, mm-hmm. physical giving. But the word compassion has also a broader meaning. Now, of course, you can give material, which may alleviate the suffering of beings, right? Hmm? I'm not so sure in the first case, but anyway, in the second case, it would have alleviated suffering. So an act of charity, but undifferentiated charity means to give, be able to give to all beings. Now, being able to give to all beings, compassion, is to be with their suffering, and particularly in this teaching, is to take on the suffering of other beings. You take on the suffering of other beings by alleviating their suffering, not necessarily you suffering. It means to free the being from suffering in some way or other. So a meditation for their well-being, some words for their well-being, some food or material substance for their well-being. But the point is, it has to be to all beings. Now, people, you may think it's very unfair of me to point it out, but there are people, say, at the Dharma Center, one woman didn't get her food, and she screamed out at the others, "You haven't got compassion, you didn't bring my food on time." As if the whole world is there to give to her at the right time. Be careful, you're not. You're here to alleviate my suffering. And don't have that view of the Lama, by the way. According to the teaching, you're here to alleviate the suffering of other beings. But you have to consider what suffering that you're causing those beings by uttering that type of remark. Do you understand me? The being at the center who talks, they have a need to talk to alleviate their suffering. They think, I mean, agitated, I gotta talk. Grab somebody, talk to them, yak at them, bring them, you understand, down and into your thing. This is not an act of compassion. So when you're at the center, you should always be thinking of others, the welfare of other beings. It comes as simple as that. You're creating a scene with your little bits of anger and your demands and this and that and the other. This is not compassion. It's not the practice. It's you. Me! You don't care what suffering you cause the cook or the attendants, right? Or the people around you who talk. I'm not talking you sending money to Israel, you know. Excuse me. Right? Or somewhere out there. I'm talking about the next person you meet. You're not practitioners of compassion, you're focused on you. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Is the next being you meet, and even the ones you don't meet. So you should be constantly focused on how can I alleviate the suffering of the other being? And if you think that yakking to them is alleviating their suffering, no. You being present all the, no. Sharing your delightful company with everybody, no, not necessarily. You understand me? I have seen some relationships, by the way, and so it's just no compassion. Everybody's there for me in a relationship. Oh my God, this is not the practice of compassion. You can flit around all the organization, Buddhist organizations you want, right? You can recite all the prayers you want. Real compassion, not pseudo-compassion, the text differentiates that is, right, you being in a state of enlightenment or good, sharing, right, even invisibly if you want, not so visibly. The first thing that you could be compassionate about is get yourself in a mani state. See, mani has to precede dana. If you're not in a state, a beautiful state, there is no dana. Have you or have you not, right, are you not practicing non-discriminative giving? The book, the sutra, starts with that. The awakened, they don't practice, but they emanate, if you wish, or manifest compassion to all beings at all times under all circumstances. Subhuti, what do you think if anyone, having said that, filled 3,000 galaxies of worlds, and there are easily that, by the way, with the 7 treasures and gave away all in gifts of alms, would they gain merit? Oh, Subhuti said, great indeed, world-honored one. Wherefore? Because merit partakes of the character of no merit. It's spontaneous, when they come to that. Just be a being who's in the giving state. You understand? Giving, it's a flow. Someone was going to give a talk in the synagogue. This is actual story. I said, oh yeah, that's fine. That's good. What's it on? Oh, the 8 stages of giving. Yeah, they would make it complicated. Ongoing giving. And you can be as sure only of the ongoing state of indiscriminate giving if you're in the state of loving kindness. Because loving kindness does not discriminate. But if you were in 8 stages or otherwise, it's good. It's good enough teaching. With 7 treasures, and gave away all in the gifts of alms, material, right, would they gain great merit? Oh, great indeed, world-honored one. Wherefore? Because merit will lead you eventually to no stages of giving. There's just giving. And nothing is being given from no one. I have to go through that with you a bit. You know, as a Christian missionary, I think it's one of those the Church of Latter-day Saints, this is a true story, by the way, it was in one of the Japanese monasteries, a Zen temple, and walked in, so on, and there's someone seated before the Buddha Rupa, you know, there's a sitting there or something, not someone. And so, what are you praying for? He said, nothing. Because then he already got the next question. Who are you praying to? No one. And so the missionary was very puzzled and started to walk out. And then he wanted to describe this state of no one not clinging, no one not clinging, or like that. It wasn't practicing non-clinging. There was no clinging. No one, right? He turned around and said, and you realize that no one was praying. So, I mean, there's a gulf in the teaching, because so many people are doing their practice as what's called gimme. And remember I told you about the 2 levels of sin, both of which you undoubtedly have. The first one is the, I'm sorry, you know, all these sins, you know, I look at them, there's suffering because there's worse to come. Fear, the fear of consequences, which is good to keep you in a bit of control on the right path. And then also because you've broken the intuitive realization of the harmony of the universe. The great sin is unloving, being in an unloving state. The unceasing hell is the unloving state. Talmudic teaching, I think, says, or Hasidic teaching is, the greatest sin is is not being joyful. But you can define that. Joy is laughing, loving kindness, that's all. is loving kindness laughing. Now, you didn't all break out into laughter. You know, we're a little bit nervous about breaking out into laughter. I know the American who went, these are true stories, you know, went to the Chinese monastery and walked in and he saw someone leaning against a pillar. And the abbot saw the look of puzzlement. Oh no, that's Brother Ho. He's just getting enlightenment. Then the Buddha said, on the other hand, if anyone received, question mark, there has to be no one there to receive, you see, and retained even four lines of this discourse, is the origin of haiku, by the way, and taught and explained them to others, his merit would be greater. Wherefore, because Subhuti, from this discourse issue forth all the Buddhas, inseparable, and the consummation of incomparable enlightenment teachings of all the awakened ones. Subhuti, what is called religion given by Buddha, is in fact not Buddha religion. It doesn't belong to the Buddha. Can't have it. You're not going to get religion. No. You're not going to get religion in the first sense of relig. That is, you're not going to be united because you're already united. Incomparable, inseparable. Right? And the only work that you could do, which is good for you, just comparatively good for you, is to releg, which is Cicero's meaning, to study again and again and again. And that's what you should be doing every moment. Bright eye, bushy tail. It's as simple as that, in a state of loving kindness. Let those that have eyes to see, let them see. Those that have ears to hear, let them hear. You know back there, he organizes religion like... Oh, God, has he ever organized? He thinks he's organized the teaching. I remember that film, you know, Clockwork Orange. This is an approach to religion, the Clockwork Orange. Right? Cuckoo Land. I mean, it's cuckoo to try to organize religion. Even the Buddhas don't know what to say. They don't think to say. Oh, take no thought for the morrow. As for eight stages of giving, I can't even manage one. Wow. Now things are reversed. All religions do it, including Buddha Dharma, you know, Buddhists do it, is try to slice the pie up in little segments and so on. When the Buddha said pay attention to detail, he didn't mean formulations. And all your suffering comes, religiously speaking, by being caught in excessive formulations inside and trying to organize religion. When the really religious act is to be aware, study, re-leg, re-logos. In the beginning, in arkein ho logos, kai ho logos, en prosan, that one. In the beginning was the study, that's how it should be translated. And there's an unending study, and that means unending awareness. And you have that, an investigation of Dharma. Remember, we went through the seven factors of enlightenment in the Mahasatipatthana Sutta. And that means you're always investigating, curious, active, engaged, with the energies, and joy, and calm, and with it, right? In non-clinging, it's the seven factors of enlightenment. And we want to know whether they're there. And you see these beings down there with the getting their various stages of enlightenment together, you know, whether the 10 these 10 parami, how do they fit with the six? I just see dukkha, 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 dukkha. Putting in, you know, now they have a wall that you can make out of fog in virtual reality now, and they're gonna use it in future to make walls that look real in the society, and they're gonna have some, you know, subway, the way a sandwich should taste, you know, they have big ads, and it looks like a wall, and you can walk right through it. Fog. That's all you're doing, is creating banks of fog. I mean, look real. They look real to you. That's the funny thing about it. They look real. And you can, but you can walk through it. Walk on. So they speculated where they're going to have in malls, you know, like big Coca-Cola signs, you know, like drink Coca-Cola, and it'll obscure, of course. You won't see anything beyond drink Coca-Cola. Are you getting my message, right? And the formulations of the religion? I walked right through it. I had been in England, and I had gone even to a girls' school. You know, they're all being being trained to be ladies. And so I get there, it's very English, very oaken stairs, this, that, and the other, and I get ushered into an upper room, and there they're all sitting, all the supposed demure, all sitting there so nicely, and I'm giving a talk on Buddhism, and I gave my talk on Buddhism, and they said, thank you very much, and they handed me 3 or 5 guineas, or whatever it was, and away I went, and I'd been to an ordinary school, and I'd been someplace else, and I gave them about 3 talks in the course of the day. And finally I got back in the evening, and I only had about 10 minutes. What I normally do is I don't prepare at all. That's a discipline, if you wish, with me. Well, it's not, it used to be a discipline, now it isn't, it's just I don't. That upsets some people. You know, a lot. So I went, I said, well, you know, I've got to give a talk here. So I opened the dictionary in a suitable place, and I forget what it was on, it was all like this. Whatever it was a nice list of things, and I went through it, and I went in, and I gave this talk, completely unprepared, just by the words. And I gave this rat, and I was, you know, really exhausted, really, I must say. I mean, if you're been traveling in England on the roads, you know, they seem, 5 miles seem like 500. But anyway, so I gave this talk, and one or two people came up to me afterwards. Wow, what a talk, what a talk. And of course, it was the most obsessional being in the room, right? I think I had listed like 27 factors. You were really getting someplace. Oh, you want 27? Tomorrow I'll give you 28. Mm. How many do you want? Yeah, and I've given like all these other classes, which to me, right, on the nature of, you know, purification, illumination, the beatific unitive vision, and to me I was, you know, really what I would call inspired. Maybe there's too much me there, I was just happy, I'm giving this. Not a word, not a peep. And they sat there very English, and here I gave this emotionally, if you want, feeling-wise, just rattle off, wow, it must have hit them like a big nuclear bomb or something, and then it came up. It's the only time I'd ever been praised. So it made me think, gee, I should put up a fog wall. And on it, I'll put on, oh, I don't know, possibly everything in the Abhita Mata Sangaha. And they were swooned away in absolute ecstasy. Anyway, there is a difference, if you wish, in the teaching, but it's all from religion, the big R in the sky, flowing down in different. So if laundry lists help you, we would give you laundry lists enough to satisfy you for years. And more texts, oh, we got texts. Oh, have we ever got texts? And you want a powerful, you got, I know about 300. I have permission to give about 300. Would you like that? 300, wow. And it will all save you from having that next moment a bit of loving kindness. Just a bit. You could just eke it out somehow or other. And the battle for you, just to give a little kindness and a little other-centeredness than you. Oh, doesn't take much, but one small step is a great leap for humanity. You know, it's like the moon, you'd be at the moon. We're talking moon travel here. Deep space, if you only would take that one little step, just one, please. Take that one little step. I know what'll happen tomorrow. I'll come with a list. You say, but. And we'll have to see the virtue of the eight. Someone said of enlightenment in the Tibetan tradition is like blowing up a balloon. And the teacher gives you more and more exact things to do. And you know, you started off with two hands, you know, and then four, and then six, you know, and you get up, and you're real serious for certain types. You have to give them all sorts of hands, and give 1,000 arm chain raising. Oh boy, now we're really getting serious. And the Great Mother, it's like blowing up a balloon, and it gets more and more swollen headed, thinking they got the Dharma. The Lama comes and goes, it's all empty. Laughing Buddha. Righto. Carry on.